Sound. Charlie Hickey on 88, Radio Life and Style, 10 feet tall. It's 9 minutes past 3 o'clock, and we're very honored to welcome to the studio, and I mean it because it's the first time I've ever had someone sitting opposite me wearing a badge that says the Honorable H.U. De Boer, which is, of course, a great privilege to be welcoming to the studio. Spokesperson, the DA spokesperson for environmental affairs, Heinz de Boer, welcome with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You've got a hell of a task on your plate at the moment, getting to the bottom of what on earth we've got to contend with regard to the spill as a result of the drama up the road or down the road at the UPI factory. Was it a factory? A storage facility? It wasn't really a factory, was it?
No, it wasn't a factory. It's a UPL.
UPL?
Yeah.
UPL, yes.
Jeez, I'll get it right. I've been blaming the courier companies and all sorts of... So it's United Phosphorus Limited.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I called it UPS, then you said UPI.
No, I said UPL.
Never mind. We've got it right now.
Yeah. UPL, so it was a storage facility. They do have another storage facility in Birralum, I believe, although I haven't been there. But it was not their facility. They were actually renting it from another company when the looting and the arson incident occurred that led to the spillage and the fire and the environmental contamination that, you know, we've seen the result of now.
Let's just talk about that for a second. What are they being charged with? Because charges have been laid
charges have been laid at Birralum police station. They were laid by a provincial government, so we have a task team at provincial government who are investigating it. They've got two specialist investigators at provincial government and two from national government who are forming the investigative team that are actually looking into the whole incident. And it's, you know, I've said it's going to be a marathon of a legal case, because it's not just an environmental pollution charge. That's the actual charge that has been laid at the moment. But we are looking from a multi-departmental type of, a spectrum. There's town planning issues. There's labor department issues. There is environmental issues. There's NEMA issues, most of all, and I think what has been echoed by everybody, particularly during the public meeting and an engagement with residents, is the constitutional issues that arise out of this whole debacle and catastrophe.
What are those?
Well, in essence, I mean, the preamble to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights basically gives everybody the right to live within an environment that is free of pollution. And in an ideal world, we would all, of course, live within that environment. But when you have a company that sets up or knowingly rents a warehouse, which is literally 200 meters away from a high school and, you know, a preparatory school, and then stores hundreds of thousands of liters of toxic chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, surfactants, and then apparently and allegedly does not inform the local authorities that they actually have that stored there.
So is that the case?
That appears to be the case at this point in
time. So the local authorities a little bit less culpable, shall we say. I would imagine that initially that local authority would have been the first port of call.
Yeah, that should have been the first port of call. And it was the onus was on UPI and the building owners to inform the local authorities of what they were storing there. Hence, it has emerged that they did not have a major hazard installation certificate. Now, your local petrol station has an MHR because they store hazardous substances. The fire department needs to know what is in that warehouse so that if it goes up in flames, they can obviously send the right people in to deal with the situation. And from what we can ascertain, the city was not fully aware of what was in that warehouse, and neither was the fire department, which led to this pollution ultimately.
Now, UPL is not a South African company, as far as I'm aware. It's an Indian company.
It is.
Is it a multinational or just a purely Indian registered?
It would appear to be a multinational. Okay. They do have a managing director here in South Africa.
All right.
Yeah.
So are they being charged internationally or just locally?
At this stage, it would appear that they are being charged just locally. We'll have to see what happens. I know that Amnesty International is involved, also in investigating this. We've got Greenpeace that is involved. And I must say, it's not just a DA issue. It's a community issue. It's residents getting together. We've got the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance, you know, Desmond Dessau and his guys involved. We've got students from universities involved. So everybody's really coming together to fight this.
But we still haven't got to the bottom of what actually has been spilt and what is currently in the water and in the sediment.
Well, I can tell you that as of Saturday, there was still a lot of green-blue dye that was leaking down through the stormwater pipes from the sediment, was still leaking into the streams that lead directly into the Mshlanga River. What this rain has done is anybody's guess. I'll have to actually get out there and take a look. We've got councillors who on a regular basis go out into those little streams in the sugarcane fields and check it out. And we've got video evidence of, as of Saturday, before the rain came, a lot of chemicals and a lot of dye and obviously pesticides are still in the sediment and they are still leaking into the Mshlanga River.
But is there still reason to keep the beaches closed?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, and that's what we've been asking all along is for transparency. How are the local authorities supposed to make a decision on whether to open the beaches or not when the provincial government has been so closed to giving out information? It's taken, and I've brought them with me here, it's taken one letter to MEC Robbie Pillay and two parliamentary questions for him to eventually release the list of those toxic chemicals. Mm. And when he did so only to the South Durban Environmental Community Alliance. He has not formally responded to parliamentary questions. So if the representatives who are elected into provincial government cannot get the official list, then how difficult is it then for the ordinary man on the street, for the restaurants, you know, who rely on beach tourism, for the B&Bs and everybody else to try and ascertain, you know, what does the future hold? As of Saturday, we were told that probably early this week, maybe towards Friday, we will see at least the Dolphin Coast beaches starting to open. There might be a reassessment now after the rain and, of course, the flushing of all those, you know, chemicals, which I'm sure has taken place into the sea. So they might have to take more samples. But there was a strong indication from the MEC that he wanted to reopen those, at least the northern beaches.
Would the responsible approach, understanding the massive impact this has had on the local economy, would the responsible approach have been firstly to patrol the beaches to determine whether there's been a die-off of marine life? Because that would indicate a major problem. Apparently there has not been a die-off of any kind of proportion on the, as far as we're aware, on the north coast. This stretch of the north coast, I'm not talking about Shorty and south. So it would appear that things are still relatively okay. Still relatively okay. And it would appear that the responsible approach would have then been to say there has been a suggestion that there may well be toxicity in the water and in the sediment. However, if you want to go and swim, it's at your own risk. Then the authorities are covered.
Sure.
Holidaymakers can come down and decide for themselves. Locals would know the conditions like we do and look at the marine life and decide on that basis, sure, whether it's wise to proceed. And all the boxes would be ticked, the economy would continue. That seems to be reasonable. What the heck is going on with these guys?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, and I think that's something that was certainly voiced at the community meeting, is that, you know, business owners and the tourism industry in particular cannot make informed decisions. Tourists who are sitting in Gauteng who want to come down, you know, and have read these terrible stories about this pollution cannot make an informed decision as to, you know, whether they should actually book a holiday down here if they don't have the correct information. It has taken them, and I'm talking about them, provincial government, at least 6 weeks to officially release only to one organization that list of chemicals. And let me tell you, it is a horrendous list of chemicals. There are some substances on there that are banned in the US, banned in the European Union. So
I think everyone's seen the list. You know, that list was released by the Daily Maverick about 2 weeks ago. So everyone's kind of in the picture there.
Yep,
and it is horrific, as you say.
Yeah.
But that's the one aspect of it. Many of those chemicals supposedly might have been destroyed by the intense heat, et cetera, et cetera. The only thing that really at this point in time is of major concern is that an entire economic sector, i.e. tourism, on which we depend heavily has been massively impacted
Absolutely.
By gross dereliction of duty
Absolutely.
By the relevant authority. Now, you obviously are the spokesperson for Environmental Sure. Affairs for the Democratic Alliance. How much clout have you got? I mean, you've got the honorable on your chest. How honorable are you?
Well,
And I mean that with respect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, there was a comment made on the weekend at the public meeting that, you know, people shouldn't use this as an opportunity to take, to take cheap politics, to get cheap media attention out of this. And, you know, I'm a resident of the North Coast too. I stay just down the road in Westbrook. You know, my kids can't go to the beach. I can't go fish at the beach. So I'm just as concerned about this issue. I have two young daughters, you know, who are in the formative years, and we don't know what, you know, was in that plume of smoke. And people are talking about, you know, genetic defects and all this kind of stuff. So, yes, I think that your suggestion that people need to make an informed decision as to whether they're going to swim at the beach or not, particularly the northern beaches. So your Salt Rocks, your Tiffany's, your Thompson's Bays, you know, those I think are probably going to be relatively safe. It's really our I think our main focus would be our Umhlanga and Umhlanga at this point in time, because that's where the river comes out,
the epicenter,
the epicenter of
the spill. It's an horrific situation, and obviously of huge concern to everyone, whether you're directly involved or not. Everyone that lives here,
Absolutely.
Everyone that works here, and everyone that wants to come on holiday here has been massively inconvenienced by it. How confident are you that there's going to be some sort of recompense?
Well, there has to be. I think that civil society has stood together. We saw it in the looting when everybody stood together, and I think that civil society is standing together now. You know, from our side, we have a team of attorneys and environmentalists who are working on this issue. And there's advocates within the community who are going to make sure that this just doesn't get swept under the carpet. Provincial government and local government has a case to answer for.
And a history of sweeping under the carpet.
There's an absolute history. We just have to look at the history of South Africa post-1994.
Exactly that. So this time, no wiggle room.
There's going to be no wiggle room. And the law is clear. It's very clear. And instead of making excuses about why reports can't be released and why, you know, test results can't be released, if UPL has got nothing to hide, then come forward and give us the information, and let's get on with the business of building the economy and building tourism and getting things back to the new normal, as they call it. But don't hide behind a media team. And the same goes for the MEC and the provincial government and the municipality. Stop hiding behind the fact that there was a case, you know, and now we can't discuss it because it's sub judice. That's nonsense, absolute nonsense. So to come back to your original question, how much clout do we have? Well, I operate as an elected representative, but I have a lot of people behind me and we are standing together as a team, and we are saying this is not just going to be swept under the carpet. This is not going to go away. We're going to make sure that it's not just a paper charge. It's not just a case number. It's going to go to court. We're going to make sure and hold the MEC to account when he said that there's going to be 8 various national and provincial departments that are investigating this. And we're going to hold him to account so that if by Friday the beaches are not opened, we want to know from him, what have you done to make sure that at least the Dolphin Coast beaches are open, because they are quite far removed from that river mouth.
Well, that's good news, and we'll be certainly following that very closely, as indeed we'll be following this entire case very closely. And thank you for coming to the studio to give us at least now a considered opinion as to where we are and what the facts are. And from here, well, I presume it's just a question of the law taking its course, guided and driven by you and the team, which we wish you huge success in.
Thank you very much.
And we look forward to happier days ahead. Heinz, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
On 88.